At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll and home of the prestigious Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hope everybody's doing good there. Hey, listen, my wife blocked me on Twitter because of my bird puns. Well, I said toucan play at that game. Thank you very much.
It's fun. It was cute. Duff delivers the goods every Friday and even on Christmas. Thanks, Duff, for the last. They just finished up their extensive Australian, Japanese, Brazilian tour, and they are deserving and enjoying some time off at home, as are we, which is perfect to sit down and watch Dangerous Breed, Crimes, Cons, and Cats. I've got Frederick Croce here today, the filmmaker behind the new documentary that's streaming on Peacock. It's a three-part documentary series that takes a look at the life of Teddy Hart. Bret Hart's nephew, of course, acclaimed, famed member of the Hart family in Calgary. Frederick filmed Teddy for years and was planning to make a reality TV series about Teddy's crazy life as a wrestler and a cat breeder. And then Teddy got into some legal trouble and the initial project was scrapped, but Frederick kept filming. Then Teddy's protege and ex-girlfriend, Samantha Fiddler, vanished in 2016. Florida law enforcement are still looking for her, and that's when Frederick realized maybe these years of footage that he filmed, especially what he had captured of Teddy and Samantha's story, could maybe be put to positive use by potentially helping to discover what happened to Sam Fiddler. Frederick explains how he first met Teddy and what inspired him to start following Teddy and filming him, shares some stories from all those years with Hart, sheds a little light on Teddy's relationship with Samantha Fiddler. He talks about working with Peacock to get this documentary series made and what he hopes it does for Samantha and her family. But before we get to Frederick, a great idea for a last-minute gift for anyone on your list, book them a cabin. For Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, the Four Leaf Clover, we set sail for February 2nd from Miami to Great Stirrup Cay. And the lineup on this ship is stacked. It seems like three quarters of the AEW roster is coming with us. The Acclaimed, Gun Club, Jade Cargill, whole entire Jericho Appreciation Society, Swerve Strickland, Wardlow, the Lucha Brothers, Mark Henry's our guest of honor, and the big main event of Jerichohausen versus the Guns. That's right, Chris Jericho and Danhausen teaming for the first and maybe only time. You're going to get to see that live on the cruise. And you're also going to get to see the inaugural crowning of the Jericho Cruise Oceanic Championship. And wait till you guys see the championship belt. It's going to be amazing. We've got comedy. We've got music. We've got live podcasts on the ship. Dave Schrader and his paranormal activities. Fozzie's playing three shows. Quarantine, Quiet Riot, Raven, Royal Bliss. I'm doing Talk is Jericho live. We're going to our own private island for the first time ever, Great Stirrup Cay. So book a cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Don't you dare miss the vacation of a lifetime. All right, let's do it. Dangerous Breed, Crimes, Cons, Cats, the tale of Teddy Hart, right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. So one of the most intriguing docuseries that I've seen for a while that I really knew nothing about is Dangerous Breed.
Crime, cons, and cons cats.
Crimes, cons, and cats. And Frederick Roach.
Frederick Roach.
Is here. Of course, this is about Teddy Hart, which if you are in wrestling, you know the legends of Teddy Hart. Everyone's got Teddy Hart stories. Teddy Hart has been on Talk is Jericho. And just to paint a quick picture for those of you that haven't heard it, for Frederick, for you, I went to Teddy's house in Orlando, the one where you filmed at, and I basically pressed record like we did right now, and I said, Teddy Hart, 97 minutes later, I literally just had to press stop. I was like, dude, I gotta go. And, you know, Teddy talks and talks and talks and talks. So he's a very intriguing character. And we'll get into kind of the weeds of the show. But how did you ever get connected with Teddy Hart and decide that you want to put together a documentary about this guy?
Like over 10 years ago, I was a journalist in Alberta. And I wound up doing like a journalism story on a local promotion called the Prairie Wrestling Alliance. And I think it was Chucky Blaze and Wrestler M. I had never really met wrestlers before, and I was filming.
You're not a wrestling fan.
I didn't grow up wrestling. Right. And, you know, it turns out all my friends know wrestling, and it's just one of those things that just bypassed me, I guess. Yeah. And I was, like, seeing these wrestlers on the stage doing these crazy... I didn't realize it was so acrobatic. I had no idea. And then I would go to, like, film their lives, their day jobs. And I remember... Chucky was like working at Radio Shack, and I'd see him work and talking to customers, and I'd see him in the ring. And to me, I was like, there is something really, really dynamic mm-hmm. about wrestling that from a documentary point of view, I want to get more into this. Next thing I know, we got a grant to make a short film about wrestling in Alberta. And we wound up following a number of wrestlers, and everybody was so damn nice. I think that there's sometimes I'd always assumed wrestlers are, you know, I'd watched the movie The Wrestler, and I always assumed wrestlers maybe were kind of rough and rugged and all this. They were all just super, like the nicest people I ever met. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking maybe there's some TV show here, but I need to find a wrestler that maybe is not so nice. Maybe just somebody that just sort of brings something new. And of course, somebody's like, you got to meet this guy, Teddy Hart. I'm like, what? Who is this guy? Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then I heard some colorful stories about they had a match at the PWA, and I think Teddy brought a cat and a knife on the stage, and it was part of a shtick. But I was like, that's interesting. And so eventually went to his mansion in Sherwood Park here near Edmonton. And that's where it all began. I just looked around, opened the door. As you've seen the film, I opened the door, I look in, and I'm like, where is this? Where am I? This is really weird. I think I got a TV show here.
It's so funny, too, because it's a classic Teddy Hart word, and we're using the word like mansion. Now, I've seen mansions before. And like, it's more of a house, but Teddy calls it a mansion. That's a Teddy Hart for you.
It was, to be fair, it was a pretty big house, near a golf course, and it was one of those sort of open concept houses with some catwalks, and there was like a full gym in there, and you know, had a ring in the backyard, and to me, it was a mansion, maybe a little bit more run down, it didn't smell great, but there was, you know, a lot of people there, it looked like a wrestling school, to me, it was like a really great mansion.
So now, once again, so you're starting to get to know Teddy Hart, and we're starting to think now, like, even is there red flags coming up as to why does Teddy Hart have a mansion
at this point? Not at first. Okay. No.
You're just thinking he's a big time wrestler. He's got big money or.
Absolutely. And he's got this Hart name that I sort of learn is this incredible wrestling dynasty in Alberta. And there's all these people there that appear to be, you know, at his wrestling school. And everybody's saying great things about Teddy. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, it's just like he's a wild man. He's interesting, but great teacher, great this. So no, I didn't know. And I guess I just sort of buckled up and went for a ride, you know, and it wasn't until much later I started realizing, wait, maybe everything isn't fully adding up to what I'm being told.
So what was your initial first impressions of Teddy, and how did you kind of talk to him about doing a documentary or filming him?
Yeah. So at the beginning, when I had this idea for a reality show, it was sort of based around the idea of redemption. And Teddy was like, you know, very, I guess, honest about this. You know, I screwed up a lot of things in my life for my big mouth, you know, and he's like, I want to redeem this. I want, you know, the Hart family to redeem me. I want to go back to WWE. I want to get my career back in shape, and I'm working out hard and I'm trying to do this. And I was like, what an interesting story angle to follow, like this redemption. Who doesn't like a redemption story? And that's sort of where it started. My first impressions of him, I was dumbfounded. Like you said about his ability to talk without stopping to breathe. Like, I think the first time I talked to him, he talked to me for like an hour. And I was just kind of half hypnotized, half stunned, like, you are pure television. This is interesting. And so he was just like, come, I'll show you anything. I'll do whatever. And I was like, okay, let's see what you got. Let's find the story.
So, because just a little background for people that might not know, is so Teddy obviously is Bret Hart's nephew, the son of Georgia Hart and BJ Annis, one of the Hart daughters, and very talented, very charismatic. And also, like you mentioned, big mouth, very maybe immature. He signed to WWE when he was 19 and was fired very shortly after. And there's now a rule, which I don't know if you know, is that they don't sign anybody under 21. That might have changed over time, but Teddy at the time was like, we're not signing any more teenagers because this guy's off his rocker. So when you say redemption, like you mentioned, now he's trying to get back in the good graces, and because he's very talented and very dynamic and very unique with his moveset. Like, he really did have, or does have, all the pieces of the puzzle, except for he's missing a few pieces in the brain puzzle, shall we say. So when you start filming, do you have any direction, or are you just kind of filming generally and thinking, like, I'll find a story thread in here somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was just sort of filming stuff at his house and trying to figure out what the story was, knowing that I think there should be some sort of redemption angle in there.
Right.
And, you know, spent a lot of time putting together, writing down what the story could be. And, you know, we mapped out a full, you know, season of stuff that I don't remember all the details, but, you know, we just really mapped out a full story that we hoped we could film. And that's, you know, that was the whole thing behind it.
What year was that?
2012, 2013. Okay, so you're
talking almost 10 years ago you've been working with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I've forgotten more about Teddy Hart than most people will ever learn. Yeah.
Right. So where did the first kind of story thread start? Because obviously in Dangerous Breed, it's three parts, and you do kind of start with what we're talking about, but is the first time something kind of comes up interesting is when he has the two the wife and the girlfriend, or the two girlfriends, or?
You know, that was just one small element. I filmed like 4 terabytes of footage on old cameras that didn't, you know, take up a lot of megabytes. I had a lot of footage. And he was constantly doing things. I followed him to various wrestling shows, saw some of the drama through that, all sorts of things that again, are not, you know, publicly available. Mm. But I had all sorts of things. It wasn't just that angle of his unique lifestyle and relationships. There was a lot more to it.
Gotcha.
And he was very, very into marijuana culture,
right?
And that was a big deal in Canada, of talking about legalization and all these things. So he was a big promoter of that. So that was kind of an interesting story angle. Mm-hmm. Lots of different stuff going on.
Because you mentioned you had a few ideas for pilots and sizzle reels, and no one was really all that interested at first.
Yeah. So I put together a bunch of material. I talked to broadcasters. I tried to create this, you know, Teddy Hart show, and a lot of people would say, the only problem with your show, it's wacky, it's crazy, it's got all these elements, but we don't feel that the main character is redeemable.
Hmm.
And I confronted that quite a bit. And I guess that one sentence tells a lot about the next 10 years of this journey.
It's almost like the main character is too unlikable to focus on in a way.
I guess you could say that. Just the bottom line is, it was just like they want a character that they know is going to be redeemed or something. And in this situation, maybe a lot of broadcasters didn't feel confidence in that.
But then you were offered a decent chunk of change to sell the show.
Yeah. At one point in time, we did find a broadcaster who's interested in giving us a bit of money to put together a pilot. Mm. And that was pretty exciting. And then like 5 or 6 days before I was going to sign the contract, somebody sends me the cover of the Calgary Sun. And that's when everything changed. That was suddenly, what? Like, what? What? And that was kind of a crazy slap in the face.
Because you're just paying for all this mentioned on your mom's credit card, and she's giving you the money, and like, you don't have any cash for this.
That's correct. It was, you know, the amount of time I put in, like, filming things and editing things, the amount of days is incomprehensible to me. So yeah, what a crazy moment when I saw that, and it's just like, wait, this can't be real. What's going on?
And what did you see? What was the headline?
I don't remember the exact. I think we have a copy of the headline in the actual production, but it was basically stipulating that he was being charged with I think sexual assault and illegal confinement.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never in my life thought I'd be working on something with that level of stuff. I was just kind of taken aback.
Is that when he went on the run to Texas? Is that the time?
Yeah, I mean, he was already in Texas,
right,
I guess, and he was there, and I guess he stayed there, mm-hmm. you know? And Yeah, so he was there, and the sort of mansion, I guess, was sitting empty at that point in time.
Had you already been talking with Faye and Michelle, the two women in his life at this point in time?
Yeah, I'd been talking to them since the beginning.
Gotcha, so they were always involved, yeah.
Yeah, Michelle came in later.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I'd always been talking to them, and it was always in the context of the reality show, you know? Mm. And then after those allegations were published, I got a very different story.
Hmm. Did you feel like when in watching the series, like obviously there's a lot of manipulation going on from Teddy, but he's also putting on a show for you. Like I'm thinking about the time when he has both the girls go into a hot tub or something along those lines, and you may make some kind of a comment. He says, well, as long as it ends up with a network program, it's worth it. Like, what was kind of the vibe on that? Were the girls kind of, like, I'm feeling almost some cult leader type things here.
Sure. Far be it from me to comment on things like cult leader and stuff. But Teddy definitely was surrounded by a lot of people who really looked up to him.
Yeah.
And he certainly, you know, appeared to exhibit a certain amount of, I don't know if the word control is right, but you know, he certainly was able to
influence.
There was a lot of influence happening there, mm-hmm. for sure. And yeah, I remember, yeah, him sitting in the hot tub and talking about it being, let's get the network and stuff like that. And then at one point in time in there, I think he's even, I remember I really liked the shot because I think I framed him in a mirror. Mm. And then there's the girl in the background. He's in the mirror and he's talking about how, like, he doesn't know where Teddy Hart begins and ends. Mm. And like, that was really important to me because that's, I was just like, wait, this is interesting. Like, who does he think he is?
Right.
Who is he?
Right.
And that's when I started, you know, sort of thinking about this idea of kayfabe and what happens when kayfabe goes too far, and then where does Teddy Hart begin, and when does Edward Annis, mm-hmm. you know, end? Mm-hmm. And I don't have an answer to that. I never found an answer.
You know, I've been through that before in my own career, probably 10 years ago for people that know my career, which is probably most people listening. When I had the suit and tie, I was wearing a suit and tie. It was very subtle. It was kind of a combination of Heath Ledger, Joker, and Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men. And people legit hated me. I was getting attacked on the street. And at that point in time, it was hard to figure out where Chris Irvin ended and Chris Jericho began and vice versa. Because I was really dropped in. I'd done some acting work and I really had dropped into this character. And you start to lose a little bit of who you are. And if you don't pull yourself back, like you mentioned with Teddy, you might not know where the end begins and the beginning ends. You know, and that, I think that's one of Teddy's maybe biggest issues.
You can certainly see in the footage that quite often he is just a consummate marijuana professional. And I think with you just a lot of blunts, that can help blunt the ability to see
Gotcha. That.
And so you add in these things and then always surrounded by, you know, yes men or yes people, maybe you do lose perspective on it, you know? And it certainly seemed like that at times, that I just wasn't sure. Like, wait, are you the wrestler right now or are you Edward, wait, who are you? And I never really knew.
All right, so you guys know a couple of years ago, I gave my dad a skylight frame. It was during the COVID lockdown when we couldn't travel to see him in Canada. He couldn't come to Florida, so we did the next best thing at the time. We sent our life to him in pictures on the skylight frame. It's still one of his favorite gifts. With the skylight frame, you can upload pictures instantly from anywhere. So that's what we're doing, emailing pics directly to my dad's skylight frame. They pop up immediately. He can tap a thank you right back in real time. We gave him the 15-inch skylight digital frame. It was really easy to set up. He just plugged it in, touched the screen to connect to his wireless network, and then sat back and watched our pictures roll in. My kids sent pictures of everything, when they were eating for dinner, the movies they were watching, pictures of the dogs. And then when all the COVID restrictions eased up, we all started sending pictures from all of our activities. We still send him pictures that way now. It's like his own private social media that's updated by the whole family all the time. Skylight Frame really makes a great gift. And right now, as a special offer, you can get $15 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter my promo code Jericho. That's skylightframe.com and enter code Jericho to get $15 off your purchase. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com and use my promo code Jericho. We haven't talked about the cat. Quickly take a quick segue into the cat. So he is breeding
Persian cats.
Persian cats. Yeah. And just so you know the background, so his grandfather is Stu Hart. who is one of the great all-time wrestling promoters and obviously the patriarch of the Hart family. So in the Hart House, which was another mansion on the hill in Calgary, there was notorious stories of cats everywhere, to where cats would be roaming in the kitchen and Stu would be making scrambled eggs and take the spatula with the scrambled eggs and then pick up the cat poop with the spatula and throw in the, like, and I don't know where, but I know the times I was in, there were cats everywhere. So this is something that kind of was instilled into Teddy from his grandfather. What was it like having so many cats in the house? You mentioned that the mansion kind of smelled. Was it kind of a dirty area, or were these things just running all over the place? And what exactly was he breeding them for?
The cats were a big part of his life. He was always talking about the history of cats and the Hart family. He was always talking about that. The story about the egg scooper is a very controversial one in the family.
They don't know if it's true or if it's real. You know, they say it's urban legend.
Definitely heard that story a few different ways. But they were more than just his shtick. Like, he definitely always brought cats to the ring.
Yeah.
They were part of his crazy performance. I mean, cat juggling, what?
Cat juggling. Also, he would put a cat, maybe even Mr. Money is the one cat I remember. He would put this cat on the top turnbuckle.
Yes.
And the cat would just stay there during the whole match.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
He claimed to be a professional cat trainer. And when I first sort of saw what he was doing, the cats did not seem upset. They seemed happy.
Super chill, yeah.
So I was like, wow. And he had names for all the moves. He had the phantom chair and that all upside down thing. All these different moves. And I was like, this is wild. Like, I've never heard of this before.
And he's literally juggling cats.
Yeah.
He would throw a cat up in the air, it would spin, and it would land in his hand. Yeah.
And but more than that, it was also, I guess, his side hustle. And he was definitely always engaged in selling high-end, genetically pure Persian show cats. And that was just a constant thing that was happening. A lot of stories of people, like even in this community, that I've heard, hey, this guy approached me in a parking lot and he pulled kittens out of a bag. But like his fanny pack. He sometimes had kittens in it. And, you know, so that was definitely part of his thing, part of his income, I guess, generation.
And also just part of his overall wacky persona.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, once again, he plays it all straight. Like, this is real. Like, Mr. Money.
This is all real. None of this was a...
Yeah, it's not a joke, and it's not funny. It's like, Mr. Money is my, you know, tag team partner, and he's going to stay on this, you know, turnbuckle.
I grew up with cats, you know. I always had a love of cats, but unfortunately, while filming at his place, I developed a bad allergy to cats.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of was rough on me later on, because I guess sometimes later in life you can develop an allergy if you're around a lot of allergens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the house got to me, man.
You know what's interesting too about the documentary that I liked, made it very unique, was most documentaries, like, and we'll talk about this later, you know, the Tiger King, like the Dangerous Breed is the Tiger King for the generation. You don't see the filmmaker really much. You are a character in this documentary series because you kind of like are a sympathetic figure because you are watching through the eyes of the audience. And it really is kind of a interesting perspective because you don't know what the fuck is going on either, you know?
Yeah, I guess that was one of the unique parts of the story, was just like that sort of having that point of view. And when we were sort of putting this new project about like Samantha Fiddler being missing and this new, I wasn't even sure like I would have be in it at all, you know. And it just sort of eventually, through the different teams we were working with, just sort of emerged like, wait, this is what a unique point of view. And as a filmmaker, I think that's kind of interesting to see that side of it.
Yeah
So in that way, it's definitely different than Tiger King, I think.
Oh, absolutely. In most documentaries, I was just using that as an example, but let's start talking about how the plot kind of thickens here. So when Teddy has these allegations from Faye and Michelle, do you interview them first, or did you go to Dallas first, where Teddy's now living with Machiko, another female wrestler? And because now they're saying he's like the worst person ever. That's one of the quotes. He's the worst guy in the world, sort of thing.
Yeah, that was one heck of an eye-opening interview. That was, I was just dumbfounded. And again, you see this in the series, and it's just like,
it's
wait.
They pull away the veil of what was going on.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I knew when I saw that newspaper article, like, our show was over, that like everything had changed. The question is, what do you do now?
Yeah.
And I'm a storyteller, you know, and I'd already invested a lot of time into this. Maybe I had insights to it because I spent so much time, and I just wanted to keep asking questions and see what was, where was the truth? What
just
was going on?
Keep filming.
And again, everybody seemed happy for me to do that. So what a weird situation to be in.
Yeah. Well, once again, though, to me, you say that the show is over, but in a lot of ways, the show is also just beginning, because now you have something really different from what you were first planning on filming.
In my head, you know, it had changed from trying to be some sort of reality show. It had changed into maybe a documentary about a person with all these allegations. It really changed in my head. It became something completely different. And it no longer felt like it was a series. I was thinking maybe I'll make a documentary documenting what had happened here.
Right.
And I didn't even know what it was. At this point in time, I just wanted to ask questions and see what was happening. I had no idea. Like, I wasn't sure it'd ever get finished, but right. I felt I had to do something.
So what were your impressions of Teddy when you go to Dallas, or I think it's Dallas, to Texas, and now he's once again, this guy lands on his feet constantly.
I was just shocked. I don't understand. He's like, he's got these charges. He left his mansion and his, you know, relationships back in Canada, and I show up not that much later, and he's got a new mansion, the car, and a new girlfriend, and they're planning to build a, you know, a cat house, like an outdoor cattery. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't understand. Like,
how does he keep doing this?
I don't know. And he definitely has a skill set for that sort of thing.
And she doesn't believe the allegations are true. But like you said, and that was her. Was that her house that he moved into?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, so they just got a new place and a new girl.
Yeah.
So what was it like then? Are you seeing kind of some of the similarities? Because there's the really, I don't know if riveting is the word, but very important scene at the Benihana Japanese restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw that footage, I was like, you know, clearly this maybe isn't the best relationship here. You know what I mean? But I helped get him on a plane, fly him to Canada, where he got arrested. We know he was going to be arrested. Right. He knew it was going to happen. So in my mind, that was sort of maybe the end. Maybe that was my story arc, you know, and there you go. And he's going to face, you know, whatever sort of legal ramifications for his activities. And that's, I don't know, that's what I thought.
How were you able to convince him to get on the plane? Did he know, like, he had to do it, obviously? Or because he's letting you film him, so it's not like he's a fugitive or something.
He knew. You know, he wanted to clear his name and get back on the redemption story train. Yeah. And I just wanted to like finally do something good, you know, for everybody. And I thought that this was the one thing I could do, is just get him there and let the Canadian legal system deal with it.
But once again, nothing really happened to him.
No, what a ride, man. What a ride. I mean, again, in the footage, you see him juggling a cat in front of the courthouse and a lot of crazy stuff.
But just the pure confidence of Teddy, too, to like, it's very impressive in a lot of ways how he just always just floats around through everything and gets away. Because I think with those allegations he did, there's no jail time served, or was there any sentence?
No, I think
nothing,
it was,
right?
No, I think it was like a pre-trial hearing and it was tossed out. So, yeah, he's back to business, I guess.
So, and you're still filming all of this because you mentioned that you thought the story was over.
Yeah. And again, I just kind of kept filming and I was like, wow, I thought this was the end of maybe a story, but it's not. So I'll just keep filming and see where it goes.
So then how did Sam Fidler come in?
As you see in the series, at one point in time, Teddy calls me up and says, hey man, I got a new girlfriend. And this was interesting because he was really talking about how I've really settled down. You know, I feel like life has really changed and I'm becoming a good man now. And he was like, do you want to meet her? And I'm like, of course, sure. Okay, let's, what? And, you know, they came to my office and that's where my neighbor, Omar, who wound up writing the Rolling Stone article, I think in 2016, he came along with me and chatted with them. And Sam showed up with her three kids. And yeah, you can see in the footage.
Yeah.
No, I chatted with them, asked some questions and was just kind of, wow, okay, this is what's going on. And Sam, they spoke very, is the word lovingly? I don't know. They seemed quite smitten with each other and happy. And that was something I hadn't really seen before.
Right.
And so I was like, wait, has something changed? It's hard. I'm very conflicted at this because I do know what, you know, Faye and Michelle had said. And so this whole thing was kind of awkward for me, but it's not my place to what could I do? As a filmmaker, I just keep filming and asking questions.
You know, the allegations that Faye Michelle had said about abuse, obviously the Japanese restaurant scene where Teddy's basically threatening Machiko, his girlfriend at the time. But he says that I've never had this a connection with a female like I have with Sam. And you made a really great point too, which is once again kind of the Svengali aspect of Teddy, in that him having a girlfriend with three little kids made him look better to the outside world.
Yeah, and you know, again, in retrospect, and that, you know, that's something that Omar sort of told me about, is like, I think that this he's using this as a bit of a look, a veil,
right?
You know, and it was working, I guess. You know, he certainly had a more wholesome look.
Yeah.
Damn. As a new father with a 2-year-old and thinking about Sam's kids not having a mom and never really knowing what even happened to her, I don't know.
It's terrible.
Makes me feel. I just hope at the end of the day, somebody watches this, and it brings up a detail that the police could use. And
kind of like even during the filming and on the show, I have a sense of almost feeling helpless, like you wish you could have do more. And there's also some times when you're like, was I enabling this?
Yeah.
That was something that I thought there was a real conflict there for you as a filmmaker.
Yeah, that's a part of this whole story that intrigues me. I never really thought I'd be the one telling a story like that. But I'm always interested in stories where you hear the conflicted side of the journalist or the filmmaker and what they're doing. And I tried to be honest about this and impartial about everything. I tried to. Did me pointing a camera at Teddy and Samantha, did that help legitimize him as a TV star?
Right,
as something?
Right, right, right.
And on some level, it probably helped add to the Teddy Hart mystique. So, you know, I got to wonder, should I have even done that in the first place? I don't know. All I know is I was doing what I could, which was point a camera at things, ask questions, and follow the story. And here we are years later.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's because you don't usually see that either as in a documentary.
Yeah, I don't have an answer. I don't know how I feel about it. I still don't. But, you know, what's done is done. And no. I tried to tell the story.
But you say that even in the series. Like, you don't
I do,
have
yeah,
an answer.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like I said, you come across as a very sympathetic character in this. And also kind of caught up in this whirlwind tornado where you're just trying to hang on and do the best you can, but like, don't think you really expected it was going to go that far when you first started in 2012.
The crazy moment for me was there's that sort of interview with me where I'm at an editing desk and I'm looking at the footage.
Looking at yourself.
Yeah, and like, and I actually filmed myself, I think in 2015, and like, I forgot that footage existed. The editors brought it up and asked me what I thought, like, watching it. And I was like, whoa, here's me filming myself. Here you are filming me, looking at myself, filming myself.
Yeah.
This is the most meta thing. And I say, I don't feel good about filming this guy, but I got a feeling somebody might wind up dead. And I've got to keep telling the story because somebody has to be there to tell it. And like looking at my young, much skinnier self saying that, I'm just like, whoa, that is to have that footage is. Yeah. So I get why they wanted my point of view in this, because stuff like that existed.
Mm.
And that's very rare. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, that's something unique. And it chilled me, man.
So let's talk about Sam, because she, when you see her on camera, she's great. She's obviously a very attractive girl. You mentioned how she gets in great shape and she gets her breasts augmented. And just like, she really has a lot of tools that you would need to be in wrestling.
Yeah, and there is a little video clip, I think, in there somewhere that I saw on her Facebook of her training at Team Vision Dojo. And like, for someone who came into this with very little experience, I don't know wrestling.
Right.
I thought she looked like she was doing great. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I saw her working out and she was really at peak physical fitness.
Yeah.
And appeared to really be taking this serious.
Yeah.
Now, you got to balance that with, was it realistic? And again, I was conflicted here hearing her talk about this. Was it really realistic that, you know, her and Teddy were always talking about this? In a year, was she going to become a famous wrestler and MMA star and be able to buy her parents a brand new house? That's not realistic.
No, it's not.
But she's,
in 10 years, maybe.
Maybe. But she was putting the work in and working really hard. So who am I to necessarily judge any of this? But It felt off to me. It felt off. It felt like maybe she had stars in her eyes and was maybe being told a grandiose dream that probably was just a dream.
Right. And once again, she even says in there, and Teddy mentions it too, that the Hart family, the name is so respected in Alberta that just the fact she was connected with the Harts might have put those stars in her eyes.
Yeah, Teddy's name, the Hart name, goes a long way in like indie wrestling promotions. It goes a long way, and that added to it for sure. But I know Teddy was always talking about, you know, just these grandiose dreams, and none of it seemed particularly realistic to me. I always thought it was kind of weird that she left three kids behind. And I never really got a solid answer on this, but I know that she wanted to chase these dreams, and she thought if she didn't do it now, she never would. But it was a weird situation.
And then, you know, we hear that, and I think he did it with Machiko too, takes their passports away and the documents away, so she can't even go back to Edmonton to visit. Like, there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of really heavy things going on.
Yeah, a number of the women that we talked to did bring that up. They did mention that, you know, passports were taken and stuff. So, yeah.
Because like you mentioned, you know, I have three kids. They're all, you know, young adults now, but you have a two-year-old. And just to leave three little kids behind to go to Orlando, and not just for a couple weeks, like it's for a year, you know. And she mentions that the kids are staying with her folks, with her grandparents. And there's another really, I don't know, creepy scene where Teddy just basically cuts her off and tells you that she's had enough of that one.
Yeah, that scene was the last time I ever spoke or saw Samantha Fiddler. Really? Was in that room. And, you know, look into the footage. It's a weird interview. It's odd. But that was basically after that interview, I was like, okay, so they're going to go take off and drive across the United States, and she's going to go to wrestling school and they're going to do this. And I was just kind of, I think I'm just done filming this. I don't know where this is going or what this is. I don't see any justice involved in any of this. I don't know what it is. And at that point, like right after that, I slammed the drive in a drawer and it was over.
That was it.
And I went on to other much less controversial things.
Sure. Before we start talking a bit more about Sam's disappearance, let's talk about Teddy's history. There's a really heartwarming / kind of sad scene where Teddy's at home with his parents, and you know, BJ Annis is like, you know, I'm Teddy's dad, do I have to admit that? They're very nice people.
Yeah.
And George is actually so nice. She's one of the nicest members of the Hart family. That must have put a different perspective on everything for you too, where like the parents are a lot of times when you have a kid that has some, I don't know, bad seed tendencies, a lot of times the parenting might have an issue, but it didn't seem that it'd be the case with the Harts. The Annises, shall we say.
You know, we tried hard to explore that and tell the backstory. I think it was in episode 2, maybe. It was episode 1, where we get into the tragedy at a young age that the family faced. And there was a lot going on there with his brother dying from, I think, necrotizing fasciitis.
And flesh-eating disease.
Yeah.
And died very quickly at 11 or 12 years old.
I can't relate to what that would do to a family, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, being at BJ's house, it feels like you're in a movie. They were just so nice to me and baking me cookies and wings, and it was the juxtaposition of Teddy being there was, you know, pretty wild, kind of a wild ride. And a bunch of Teddy's cats actually got left at his parents' house and they were bringing him up. One of them was Blunt. And those cats were leading great lives. They were leading their best lives at BJ's house.
And just the background is that, so BJ owned BJ's gym in Calgary, which was a famous gym where all the wrestlers went. And this is when, you know, Diana married Davey and Allison married the Anvil. And there was another, I can't remember, Ellie married the Anvil. Allison married Ben Bassarab, who was a Stampede wrestler. And Georgia married BJ Annis, who was the owner of the gym. So they were all married to Stampede wrestling affiliated guys, right? So that's just a little bit of the background. If you're ever wondering what the Hart connection is for Teddy, that's who his father and his mother is. I'm sitting there watching Teddy go on and on about how he needs to clear his name and how Faye and Michelle are after him. And his dad and mom are just sitting there listening. And his poor mother just got that smile on her face, which is like, oh gosh, just hearing these stories. And like they hear them all the time. And they say, we feel bad that his career didn't go the way it should. Like, Do you feel that they, I don't know even what the question would be there. When you go film this, did you feel sad for the parents?
For sure. You know, as a parent, as a new parent, I got to wonder what, you know, what, who will my son be when he grows up?
Yeah.
And having not had that experience yet, I don't necessarily fully understand what that's like.
Right.
I can't imagine it's been easy on any of them dealing with a lot of Teddy's antics. I can't imagine it's easy for them.
Do you feel that Teddy still has a deep-seated psychological issue with the fact that his brother passed away so young?
I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah, no, I'm not either, but I'm just...
It's something, you know, that did occasionally come up, that he would bring up sometimes, but I don't know.
Let's talk about Sam. You mentioned the last time you filmed with her was when she was talking about kids living with grandma, but you also went to Tijuana with them. You went to Mexico. There's a really sweet scene where she gets to see the ocean, and all she ever wanted to do was see the ocean. There's some good times there. Like you mentioned, they look like a cute couple with the big coconuts drinks and on the boardwalk and all that sort of thing.
Wow, that footage is like, it's kind of hard to watch right now, just knowing what eventually happens to this such a bubbly, happy person.
I
filmed a lot of shots of them hanging out, and she had all these new experiences, and like she'd never seen the ocean before. So that footage is like, it's cool when you get to capture something like a real moment like that. It's real. They're not faking anything. And filmed lots of them. Lots of them. Her eyes were wide as saucers. Everything we did was blowing her mind, and she was excited, and it was interesting.
When you go talk to her sister, kind of get that story as well, and kind of find the last few days, because her sister seemed like she was very close with Sam. They were always communicating and that sort of a thing. Kind of tell us, in a nutshell, where does she just kind of drop off the face of the earth?
I think it was a few weeks before she's released from, I think, the Polk County Jail.
She got put in jail for driving without a license or something, or what was it for?
It was for having an outstanding warrant, and she didn't go to court for it. And so she was getting a new driver's license, I think, in Polk County.
Something like that. Yeah.
So, something like that. And anyway, because she was in like a government building, her name was flagged. And I guess she was automatically arrested and I think released the next night or something.
Right.
And sorry, I don't have all the details in front of me.
No. But
there's a lot of details.
And then you filmed for 10 years. So yeah, people will be watching anyway. So.
But so she sort of, I think she tried to call April and April missed the call, and then there's like one last, you know, Facebook message or something, and it's just drops off the face of the earth.
She's changed her hair. She's blonde. Cut her hair.
It's weird, hey?
Yeah.
That stuff had us very curious when we were looking at all this stuff and trying to wonder what happened here. Was very odd, I think.
It's interesting because, you know, you mentioned you're not a psychologist. You're also not a detective either.
And no.
It's like did the police come and talk to you about this?
At this point in time, nobody has, from law enforcement, has ever wanted to speak to me. No.
Wow. And it seems almost like April said that they're not even really looking for her because she's a Canadian citizen in the States, but Canada's not looking for her either. Is it kind of like some red tape going on there?
In my impression, when people first realized she was missing and tried looking into it, I don't think there was a ton of movement happening on it. Mm-hmm. And then the Florida Department of Law Enforcement did come in and take over it, and I'm pretty sure they're really actively looking.
Especially now that the documentary's out.
I would hope so, but honestly, I know that FDLE has been looking for the last number of years, and I think it's hard. I don't think there's a lot of evidence there.
Yeah.
She just kind of goes missing,
yeah.
And so it's hard for them. So again, anybody listening to this, if you're in Florida, the area, and you, like, man, she looks familiar, if you might have a detail, do not hesitate to let the Florida Department of Law Enforcement know.
And kind of going back to what we talked about before, but your conundrum, your battle with yourself over whether you were an enabler, but I think at the end of the day, the fact that this documentary is out is a very positive thing to try and help find out what happened to Samantha Fiddler. It's not just another name that disappears. Now there's actually a 3-part docuseries on NBC where people can watch this and see and learn about her.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely part of the motivation. Years later, now looking at NBC doing this project and being a part of it, that's a huge motivation for me. You know, it's such a huge platform. Peacock is huge, and it was on USA Network. And just to get the word out, I don't know what else you could do, you know, to get the word out more than that. And in the beginning, nobody was talking about Samantha.
Right.
And that bugged me a lot.
Yeah.
And it bugged April and it bugged Jamie and everybody was like, why does nobody seem to care? Well, now you can't avoid it. This name pops up all the time online. As a filmmaker, I try my best.
Yeah. So you spoke to Teddy after Sam had disappeared. I'm assuming it's probably the last time you spoke to him on camera. And once again, the arrogance that he shows, the quote, I don't give a fuck about Sam Fiddler because she did this to herself. I mean, that's some pretty no remorse type statements to be making here from this guy.
You know, in this situation, I feel like showing that stuff, like the audience knows as much as I do.
Yeah.
You know, there were times when Teddy said nice things about her.
Yeah.
And there were times when he said really, as you see in the film, really off things about her. I don't know why somebody in his position wouldn't just try to help.
Yeah.
I don't understand. So that always made me, you know, just kind of questioning the whole thing. It was weird. He took a weird position on the whole thing and filmed it.
No, and he knows he's on camera. That's the thing that just blew my mind. Like I said, the arrogance shown there and the lack of empathy maybe is the word.
Again, let the audience decide. You know, it's there. It's on film and you can see for yourself and judge.
Yeah.
Be your own psychologist on what's going on here.
Well, I mean, and the thing about it too that's so crazy is he shows remorse at other points in time. Like he says, well, say hi to Faye and Michelle for me and tell them I still love them. I know they can't talk to me. And, you know, a little bit nostalgic at that point.
Yeah. One point in time he said, I want to get all the girls together and let's all go hang out at Disneyland together. And I'm just like, dude, what are you saying? Like, this is insanity that you're saying to me. That's a what? And so it would flip around. It would be from mean comments to nice comments. So again, it comes back to that kayfabe, that where does reality begin and end here? I never really knew. And when you see that, it makes you want to keep filming and asking questions because there's like, is there truth here? Where is it? I want to find it. And then 10 years later, you wind up in this situation.
Well, like you said, too, he says, I've never been more connected to a woman before. And then the last interview, it's like we were never a couple. And it's like I barely knew her. And there's so many kind of contradictions in what he's saying. And it's like, dude, it's all on film. You've got it all here.
Yeah.
As we start to wind down, a few more things about Teddy himself. You mentioned we were talking earlier about when you went to Tijuana to watch him wrestle.
Yeah.
And just kind of how. So just a little bit of a background is, you know, Teddy had chances. I specifically remember telling him in probably 2014 or 15 when we had a show in Calgary, a WWE show, and then Edmonton, go to Edmonton tomorrow. I will get you booked on the show. You better be there. Like, and he's like, I'll be there. And I think he showed up, but I think he showed up late. Like, it was one of those things where he's like, go, I will get you on the show. You better be there. And he didn't. And it was just like anytime you tried to help, because deep down inside there is a good guy in there, he would do something like this. And Conan was another guy that really wanted to help Teddy a lot as well. And I know at one point he was like, you know, I really need to reel Teddy in. There's no entourage allowed. He needs to be on time because Teddy likes the entourage. Teddy likes to dress in the silk pajamas. You know what I mean? Like all that sort of stuff. And Conan, I think, was maybe one of Teddy's last real chances to be in the big leagues where you smiled when I said no entourage. I don't know if you know that story or if that's you've heard that.
I got an anecdote for you. About the Tijuana show.
They're filming it, yeah.
Well, okay, and I don't know, did it make the final cut? I don't know. But if it's not, here's a little tidbit that didn't make the show. So when I flew down to San Diego, you know, to meet Teddy and Samantha in their car, and then I was going to drive with them to Tijuana, and they were going to do this big show,
right.
You know? And as far as I knew, we were talking to Conan's buddy who was organizing this, and the rule was Teddy Arhat must be on time. No cats and no entourage.
Right.
And Teddy showed up late, missed the press conference in a car full of cats with an entourage. And obviously I'm there filming the behind the scenes and things got pretty messy. And I'd never been to Tijuana before and I'm running around filming this and there was, you know, a lot of people were angry. Maybe at times I felt a little scared.
Yeah.
It was just a wild experience. It's like what you just said.
Right.
He was given three rules. And he immediately broke all three.
All three.
And it's like, whoa. And poor Samantha's there and just rolling with the punches. And just like, I'm here to support. I'm here to do whatever. And she's just a very lovable person trying to make the best of a weird situation.
And maybe could have done just as much on her own without Teddy, you know? And that's that's kind of thing. Where do you break away from that? But it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I've now, like, as we're talking, these stories are coming back, and Conan was pissed because, you know, once again, there, and even the story I just told you about me telling him to go to Edmonton, I remember this. I was like, dude, like, there's nobody can help you now. You have to do this yourself, you know? And like you mentioned, like, three rules and instantly broke all three. That's just being an asshole, you know? And that's just, yeah, you don't have to answer that, but that really is, you know? And it's just like you mentioned, like, going to a Jaguar, like, how is he doing this? Going to a Jaguar dealership and buying a brand new Jaguar and then driving across the country with this all junk and cats, and like, they destroyed that thing.
It was a weird experience. And the car thing, that was not just the Jaguar. He always, at his mansion, he always had new, brand new, extremely expensive vehicles where, you know, you're often like, I don't understand. I don't understand. And when you sort of ask, where do these come from? I never really got sensible answers. I didn't really know. And, yeah. But I'm just like, this is interesting, so I'll keep filming it.
It's like the guy is in Edmonton with the big long beard that was giving him lots of money, Bill or something.
Bill, yeah. That was another, just came out of left field. I'd never heard of him before. I had no idea. And you're at the remand center, the jail. Teddy gets, and this guy shows up, and you're like, wait, what? Yeah. I don't. And as you see in the show, it's just another weird experience that I wasn't expecting. Just kind of came out of left field.
Well, he also, like, he's very good at, like, you know, Bill's saying, well, you know, we're going to put a lot of money into Sam Fidler, and she's going to become famous in MMA and wrestling, and then, you know, we'll get our money back. Like, how does that work? She's going to pay you guys the money. Like, that doesn't work that way. It's not like a, you know, like a Don King boxing promoter. Like, it's like, but that's Teddy's, his rap, his game.
I don't know. You look at the footage, you be the judge. I mean, they're all saying these things, and this is the universe according to their rules. I just pointed a camera at it.
I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for the hamburger today, sort of a vibe, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
that's being generous.
So how is it for you now that the documentary is out? You mentioned, obviously, this is the biggest thing you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
NBC is a huge platform. Peacock, I mean, WWE is involved. I mean, I see Kevin Dunn is an executive producer on this. And it's also surprising to me that WWE even is involved. You know, I guess they decided they wanted to have something to do with it, but it just seems very strange because it's a very not WWE style story.
I wasn't involved in any of those conversations. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have no insight into any of that.
How is it for you, though, to have it out? Is it something that you, has it raised your level of visibility?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, there has been, like, on social media and stuff, there has been a tremendous response. There's been a lot of buzz. And again, seeing so many people talk about Samantha Fidler, I'm just like, this was the point. You know, I just wanted to get that conversation started, and I'm seeing it happen. So that feels gratifying. And I've had, I usually make stuff that's just not controversial. I don't. I usually film rural veterinarians and these sorts of things, right? And so it's been weird. I mean, at one point in time, some people were talking about, like, did I murder Samantha for the documentary? Yeah. And, I'm new to this. You're probably so used to the crazy world.
The thickest of skins.
Thickest skin. And so I'm new to this. So it's been like, what an eye-opening ride. It's very exciting. And again, if just the case could move forward a bit, it would just be so good for everybody involved in this.
Right.
And I hope that it's not too cold. I hope there's still some evidence lying somewhere that somebody remembers and we find out what happens to her.
Because that was 2016, right? That she disappeared, I believe.
Yeah.
It's been a few years. Have you heard anything from Teddy since the documentary came out or when he found out that it was being made?
Yeah, there's been a very minor amount of, you know, messaging. Nothing tangible.
Yeah.
Just the experience of doing something like this has been a little overwhelming. I never thought I'd wind up as, like, a point of view in this.
Yeah.
I never thought that it would garner so much social media attention. I never thought I'd be sitting here talking to you in a podcast. Yeah, like, this This all feels still kind of surreal. It just came out a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So I don't know. If the case moves forward, I will call this a big success.
You're genuinely a nice guy and a good filmmaker that just got caught up in this thing. And once again, even just the world of wrestling, if you don't understand it, like you mentioned, just the thing in TJ of seeing Conan and seeing, like, if you don't know about, that's enough to, like you mentioned, that's like a freak out moment for you. Now add in a disappearance and all this other crazy stuff. It's probably one of those things where, you know, you didn't expect it was going to go this way.
No, man. No,
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a ride.
What's next for you?
I've got a number of projects in development right now, and right now nothing like this. I'm trying to make a documentary about Edmonton's last video store. So I'm, you know, that's what I'm really focused on right now. So, and we'll see, you know, where does this all go? It all depends. I have no idea. It's been just an interesting ride, and I'm kind of glad that part of it's over. And I want to see somebody come forward that knows what happened to her.
Some justice. I agree. Do you have a favorite scene in the documentary at all, or a scene that sticks out for you?
That's a hard one to answer. There's a few different elements to that. I'm lucky and glad that I got to capture such raw moments with Samantha.
Yeah.
You know, like seeing the ocean stuff, that's a very rare thing. And it's great to be able to show that and really show who she was in that sense. That is very meaningful to me. And I guess it comes down to, like I just said before, that shot where I'm looking at a young version of myself, weirdly, before I even met Samantha Fiddler, I somehow literally predict like this whole thing. Mm. And I don't know how that happened, but when, you know, when something like that happens, it's almost like, I don't know, it'd be fatalistic, but like, was it, you know, I just maybe subconsciously, I just knew something was off about everything and it was going to end poorly and I had to keep filming. So
you had some kind of a premonition that was showing you.
Yeah. And being someone that doesn't know much about wrestling, I did get to see a lot of cool things up close. So many people see the show, but they don't see behind the curtain. Mm. And having those opportunities to see both sides of it was very entertaining and eye-opening. And I think I've got, as a filmmaker, I've got really unique insight and respect for the wrestling community that your average fan, I don't think,
right,
would.
It's
unique and different. And that's something that I think I'll keep with me always.
I think the fact that you didn't know anything about wrestling, you got to see things with a different perspective. You know, not from a fanboy perspective, probably from like a inner workings, you know, directorial perspective, if nothing else, you know?
Absolutely. I kind of kept saying that. And like when people would be like, how are you, know nothing about wrestling in here? And I'm like, I think that's kind of an interesting part of this. I think I'll be able to look at this in a slightly different way than another filmmaker who's a fanboy would.
Right. My favorite scene is when you're trying to get him to say, this is the new dungeon, this is where Teddy Hart lives, and he's super stoned and he's got a cat in his lap and he's talking to the cat like you like when I with the filmmakers, and he still never gets it right.
If you could imagine how,
oh my gosh,
how many hours and days of that moment that I
over and over again. Well, dude, at the end of the day, you made a very riveting documentary series, and I think everybody should check it out. And hopefully, like you said, at the very least, we'll get some kind of a news or clue on what happened to Samantha Fiddler.
At the end of each episode, I think we're at the end of the series, FDLE's number's up there, you know?
Yeah.
If you think you've got something to help me, not sure, give it a call. Can't hurt.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate
it. Great, man.